Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 7. Lord Shiva saves the universe. Text 34. Tatasya te sarasato parata parasya.
Tatasya te sarasato parata parasya.
Nanja sarupa gamane prabhavanti bhumna.
Nanja sarupa gamane prabhavanti bhumna.
Brahmadaya kemuta samstavane vayantu.
Brahmadaya kemuta samstavane vayantu.
Tat sarga sarga vishaya api shakti matram. Tat, therefore, tasya, of that. Te, of your lordship. Sat asato, of the living entities. Moving and not moving. Parata, transcendentally situated. Parasya, very difficult to understand. Na, nor. Anja, as it is. Sarupa gamane, to approach your reality. Prabhavanti, it is possible. Bhumna, a great one. Brahma adaya, even such persons as Lord Brahma. Kimuta, what to speak of others. Sangstavane, in offering prayers. Vayantu, as far as we are concerned. Ta, of you. Sarga sarga vishaya, creations of the creation. Api, although. Shakti matram, to our ability. Translation. Even personalities like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot understand your position, for you are beyond the moving and non-moving creation. Since no one can understand you in truth, how can one offer you prayers? It is impossible. As far as we are concerned, we are creatures of Lord Brahma's creation. Under the circumstances, therefore, we cannot offer you adequate prayers. But as far as our ability allows, we have expressed our feelings. For those of you who don't know, these are the demigods offering prayers to Lord Shiva to inspire him to rescue the universe, which is threatened by an ocean of poison. Next verse. Eta param papashyamo na param te maheshvara. Midanaya hilokasya vyaktiste vyaktakarmana. O greatest of all rulers, your actual identity is impossible for us to understand. As far as we can see, your presence brings flourishing happiness to everyone. Beyond this, no one can appreciate your activities. We can see this much and nothing more. Purport. When the demigods offered these prayers to Lord Shiva, their inner purpose was to please him so that he would rectify the disturbing situation created by the hala hala poison. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, kamaish taishtaya vittagana prapanjante yadevata. When one worships demigods, this is certainly because of deep-rooted desires he wants fulfilled by the mercy of those demigods. People are generally attached to the worship of demigods for some motive. Om Jnana Chimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava Yoga Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We have here a dangerous situation which has been created by the Lord and will be solved by Lord Krishna. Prabhupada comments in the beginning of the chapter that materialists cannot understand how dangers arise and dissipate by the will of the Lord. Materialists think that if there's some danger, it's an accident. Oh, a terrorist attack. How could this happen? It must be because it was a failure of our intelligence agencies. It must be because of this, because of that. If only! Let's have an investigation. It never dawns upon them that there are such things as karmic reactions. It never dawns on them that there is a supreme controller who, although not directly administering the system of actions and reactions, has established that system. That's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, if I don't come to this world and set it straight every once in a while, I could be accused of neglect. Child neglect, because all living entities are my parts and parcels. I'm the actual Lord of all the planetary systems. So therefore, if I don't come to this world and set things straight every so often, I could be accused of being irresponsible. Utsideya ime loka nakuryam karma chedaham samkadasya chakarta sam. The Lord explains his motivations in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is an amazing book because you are directly hearing from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How seriously do we take Bhagavad Gita? How seriously do we understand that in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, the possessor of all opulence, is speaking? Often you might say to yourself, if only I could hear from God, then I would be okay. If only God would talk to me and instruct me, then I would be okay. But in Bhagavad Gita, God is speaking. I remember when I was a little boy, around 7 or 8, I was always lamenting, why couldn't I have been born at a time in the universe when there was someone like Jesus or Muhammad on the planet? I was always lamenting like that. Yet, present all the time, are Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. The Lord is directly speaking. As you know, there are two types of Krishna Katha. Talks about Krishna spoken directly by Krishna, and talks about Krishna spoken by Krishna's devotees. Both are extraordinarily precious and valuable. We were speaking about how the non-devotees view any upheaval, any great disaster in life as something out of the ordinary. A sneak attack, a low blow, how could this happen? An accident, just like, you know, when Jarasandha attacked Krishna's city and he was completely defeated by Balaram and Krishna. His army, his massive army, wiped out. And then he was let go by Krishna and Balaram because they knew he would just go and amass another huge army and come back and bring that huge army right to their doorstep for annihilation. They figured, yeah, let's take advantage of this demoniac determination. You have to be determined about something. Why we cannot be determined about Krishna consciousness, that's very interesting. But it's not that we have no determination. Even somebody in the mode of ignorance has some determination to remain in the mode of ignorance. I'm determined to just sleep and eat and take drugs. That's all I'm going to do. Determined. Why cannot we have determination to serve Krishna? Well, because our heads are spinning with so many artificial desires, so many artificial problems. You can make a list sometimes of all the problems you imagine you have. Try it. It's very interesting. I imagine that there's this and there's that. Make a list of all the people who make life miserable for you. Make a list of all the puzzles that are in your life, the things that just won't work out right. And try to understand what is your determination to really do something about it. Or are you, as they say in Australia, are you just a whinger? I'll be handy to get come up with the more strong terms. Are you just a whinger? You know, no matter what happens, you're going to find something to whinge about. Someone to whinge about. What is the point of all that? Where is your determination? It's not that we have difficulty manifesting determination in Krishna consciousness, but we also don't manifest determination in material life. No. So many of you can look at your material life before coming to Krishna consciousness, and you'll see that you show signs of great determination in some sphere of activity, unless you were completely in the mode of ignorance since birth. You showed some kind of determination. Now, bhakti yoga means use that determination to achieve Krishna. The determination to be Krishna conscious is such a special thing. And when you manifest that determination, your whole life can change. Krishna likes to see determination. You just work on the determination. Krishna will take care of the outcome. Suppose you notice that someone is determined to please you. How would you feel? Even if they hadn't already done something yet. How would you feel? You feel, oh yes, this is what it's all about. Suppose someone said to you, I'm determined to please you. I'm determined to find out what you like best, and I'm determined to do it. Even before that person started to do something, you would be impressed just by the mustering up of this kind of conviction and determination. Now, of course, you might say, someone may desire to be determined, but let's see what actually happens. However, what happens in Krishna consciousness? When you truly can generate some determination or the desire to have determination, Krishna in your heart notices. And he helps you. Don't think that you're left alone to struggle in bhakti yoga. No one cares. No one understands. The temple president doesn't understand. The Chintarupa, she doesn't understand. The devotees, they don't understand. You're left to carry your burdens all alone. Krishna is in your heart, waiting to see when you'll truly manifest some determination to please his senses. It's amazing how addicted we are to pleasing our own senses. That we don't count as determination. We count that as just natural. The way things are, you know, the way things are meant to be. No, that's determination. The mode of passion involves determination. That I shall endeavor to please my senses and achieve my goals. And not even analyze how these goals are bringing me suffering. And if some problem happens, if some setback, it's just an accident. You know, if you're really going to be a topmost materialist, you make your life like sports stars play games. Like if, you know, I don't know an example of Australian sport, but if, you know, you make a bad move in a game, in a match, and the other team takes advantage of it, it happens to the best players. What do? What's their reaction? You have any cricket fans? Budimant is not here. Does that shock you, Mantra? has your husband imparted you the divine knowledge of cricket? So what's an example? What is the attitude of a the top sports stars when they make a mistake and the other team capitalizes?
Lighten you, it sways.
What's that?
Lighten you, it sways. Starts and he walks around the tennis court now.
And then what? You're back into it. they shake it off, so to speak. It's like water's off a duck's back because we're professionals, we're competitors. Okay, I made a mistake. Other team scored, whatever. Life goes on. Game's not over yet. They all said, "Game's not over. Plenty of time left. To turn things around." And people appreciate it. That attitude, that's a true competitor, a true sports star. And so, people take this attitude about their material life, and they think it's very noteworthy. If some setback happens, just shake it off, keep on going. Right? People are attracted to materialists like that. They've got a really positive attitude, those kind of people. They know how to keep going. They're the ones who are going to achieve things, not the daydreaming no-hopers. Reminds me of talking about. So, is that actually a smart attitude? Just shake it off and keep on going. No. You should understand that these setbacks are part of Krishna's system to show you that you cannot be happy, you cannot enjoy in this world. Jarasandha, he was totally annihilated and crushed. Only he was left after a huge army of his was massacred. Literally massacred. Mm-hmm. And then, instead of killing him, Krishna and Balaram let him go. Which is very shameful for a Kshatriya to be let go, to come home from a lost battle alive. And what did Jarasandha do? He was thinking, I'll just go to the forest. I'll perform severe austerities and penances. I won't go back to my kingdom. Such a shameful situation. But then he met up with some of his old mates. And he said, what's the problem? It's just a bit of bad luck. Everyone knows you're the greatest warrior. Everyone knows you're wonderful. It was just a slight, problem with your past karma. Don't think about it. Shake it off. Get back into action. You have to watch and make sure you don't have association like that in your life that inspires you to perform material activities with determination. Mm-hmm. You want the kind of association that inspires you to develop in Krishna consciousness. We all are creatures of association. So we need to surround ourselves with devotees who are going to manifest their determination in Krishna consciousness. What happens if you surround yourself with whingers? Have you tried it? Isn't it so? If you want to just spend your days in the temple community whinging, don't you know who to find? isn't it? There's always a pocket. There's always someone, right? You can just go on and on. This, that. I remember when I was a young devotee in Los Angeles in 75. So there were some problems in one temple, and there were serious problems, but the situation was corrected. In fact, Prabhupada commented that the devotees in this temple were very strong, because even though there was some problem, they were not affected. Still, I was a young devotee and my idealism was disturbed. How could such a thing happen? How could this person who was, supposed to be in charge, how could he do something like this? And this time I'm going to, keep my eyes on everyone. I'll be on top of everything that's going on, This was before there was the internet, I was in Los Angeles, which was a place where many visiting devotees from all around the world would pass through. So I was determined to talk to all the visiting devotees, find out, all the problems that were going on in their part of the world, Oh, really? Hmm, yeah, I see. So I could feel I was really getting into that. And I began to think, this is not the way I want to go. And I noticed, as I started getting into that mentality of, you know, always looking for faults, being on top of the latest news, you know, who's causing problems, you know, all over the world, and who's let persons down, and who's disappointed Prabhupada, and, you know, just like, you know, gathering, you know, like a news wire service, gathering all that information. And as soon as I started getting into that, what do you think happened next? Persons with that mentality begin to gather around you, and, you know, you really start to get fired up. They encourage, yeah. And did you hear this? Did you know about that? What about what happened 10 years ago there? Did you know that? And you know, just get really worked up, you know. Because you want to be on top of everything. You don't want anyone pulling anything over on you, you know. So actually that starts to become your so-called devotional service, you know. Being on top of the latest news and... Prabhupada called it shop talk. Mm-hmm. Those of you who work in whatever capacity in a factory or office talk, you work in an office, there's always that zzzz going on, right? Yes? Shop talk or office talk. Who's doing what? Who's been mistreated? Who's cheating? Who's this thing, that? There's always that kind of zzzz going on. So Prabhupada called it shop talk. He felt it was completely unnecessary. He felt it was so unnecessary to the extent that when a devotee proposed to Prabhupada, I would like to make a news publication presenting information of news from all the temples around the world. You know what Prabhupada's reaction was? What is the need for this? In every temple, they're chanting Hare Krishna, they're doing Sankirtan, they're dancing. Why do we need this? That was his attitude. He knew, you know, he knew the Western mentality. Give them a communications medium and they'll turn it into, you know, something that's volatile. So much so that when there was suggestion to make a worldwide ISKCON telex system, back then the high technology was a telex system. Most of you probably don't even know what a telex system is. Yeah, that was before the fax machines. It was telex. That was the instant communication system. So, devotees proposing, Prabhupada, worldwide link-up telex system. All devotees can constantly communicate. Prabhupada said, what is the need for this? They'll just gossip. So, it shows you his line of thinking. It's not to say it's impossible to use these kind of things in Krishna's service, but it shows you Prabhupada's caution and his knowledge of the psychology of his followers. So, anyway, I noticed as I got into this kind of mentality, the whinging mentality, and actually I had reason to feel that way from a certain point of view, but still, I noticed as I got into that mentality, persons like that began to congregate around me. And, you know, you start to fire each other up and inspire one another in being critical-minded and fault-finding. Fortunately, very quickly I realized this is not the way I want to go. After about a week of it. So I remember what I did. There was one devotee from India, my godbrother Haridas. I see him in Mumbai sometimes to this day. He came and he gave a lecture about his experiences with Prabhupada. And he was describing how this is the Haridas who was a thief and who started, he was a professional thief and he started associating with devotees because he saw that a picture of Prabhupada wearing a Rolex watch. And so he saw the picture of Prabhupada with a Rolex watch and decided, there's my next victim. I'm going to get that watch. So he started to hang out with devotees just for that purpose. And And gradually he became so purified. And actually, he presented to Prabhupada, you know, I first, you know, I became attractive. I started associating just because I wanted to steal your watch. And Prabhupada just looked at him, looked at the watch. What's the big deal, you know? No, Prabhupada, no. So anyway, he was describing his personal experiences with Prabhupada. And he said, because he was like practically the first Indian devotee to join ISKCON, so sometimes he would feel a bit lonely because, you know, there were all Westerners around in India in ISKCON at that time. And also he would get special treatment from Prabhupada because Prabhupada would be very fatherly in an obvious way with the Indian devotees who first came to ISKCON because, you know, they were in a special situation. Yeah. They're Indians joining a movement that originated in India, which was mostly Western. Yeah, they were getting a little uncomfortable, so Prabhupada compensated. He would always give them special attention and special darshan and like that. Subhad Maharaj can tell you more about that. So he told how he would always try to be with Prabhupada. When he would hear that Prabhupada was in Mumbai or Delhi, although Haridas was the Pujari, maybe Ahmedabad, whatever, he would drop everything and just go to where Prabhupada was. Not very responsible. But that was all he knew. Prabhupada's in India. Drop everything, just go. He wouldn't ask anybody. Just drop his service and go. So this happened a number of times. And then it happened again. He heard Prabhupada was in Bombay, so he dropped everything, took the train to Bombay, and then tried to get in and see Prabhupada, and the sannyasis were guarding the door. But, you know, he used to be a thief, so he knew how to slip by. So he just waited and watched, and when the sannyasi turned his back, into Prabhupada's room. Thunderbolts, come on, Vishnubhadaya, 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 you know, to Swami Thali. Prabhupada, I had to come and see you. And Prabhupada just looked at him. Do you think I am this body? You can go to any temple, to my Vyasa-san, where there's a picture of me. I am there. Prabhupada told him that very solemnly. And Haridas never forgot that. So I remember sitting in Los Angeles listening to this. So I said, here's a solution to my problem. So I decided every day I was going to go into the temple room and crash down in front of the Vyasa sign and beg Prabhupada, please get me out of this mentality. I don't want to be a fault finder. Please help me. Get me out of this mentality. So I did that. I remember every day for 3 days. After 3 days, gone. Mentality just disappeared completely. So, the point is, your determination is there in life. Now you have to uncover what it is. Are you willing to pay the price to be determined in material life? And what do you get for all that? Are you prepared to be a Jarasandha? To fight for your sense gratification no matter what? And you're completely smashed and defeated, and your friends tell you, it was just bad luck. You're competent. You've got abilities. You've got the know-how. Try again. Is that the kind of life you want? Is that what you want to do with your determination? What about in relationships? How determined are you to pursue sense gratification in some kind of relationship no matter what? It's quite common these days. If people get married at all, they're going through 2 and 3 marriages. It's like in Russia, the material tendency there is they marry early, 18 or 19, and then they're divorced by the time they're 30, then they marry again. And so everybody's got at least, speaking about the non-devotees, but unfortunately that behavior influences the weak devotees, So by the time they're in their 30s, everyone has got basically two marriages and often three. That's just the norm there. So let us see what our determination is. Then we'll understand where we're at. You cannot fool Krishna. Krishna is in your heart. He just wants to see. Don't you want to try to do something for me? He just wants to see that you want to reciprocate with a little steadfastness and a little patience. But it's so hard for us to wring a little bit out of our stone-like hearts. Amazing how hard it is. Oh. All right. I'll do a little something for Krishna. I'll give a little donation. Yeah. I'll give 1% of my income. I'll do a little service. Yeah. Krishna said, offer him a leaf, fruit, flower, water. He said it. I'll give him a flower. So, this shows how miserly we are and how stone-hearted we are. This is the big problem in our Krishna consciousness. Although we think we're very nice persons, each one of us thinks, oh, I'm a very nice person. Actually, it's shocking how stone-hearted we are. It's amazing how miserly and cheap we are when it comes to Krishna. Anyway, he's God. He's got everything anyway. What's the big deal, you know? He can do it all himself. He's got multi-potencies. He can accomplish it all. What does he need from me? Meanwhile, I've got some desires. I've got some things I have to have. What's the big deal? Everyone's trying for it. What's wrong with me trying for it? Why do I have to be the freak? Someone just wrote me a letter. Maybe it was somebody here. I don't know if I can go on just like, you know, not trying for the things that everybody else in the world is trying for. I don't know if... Was that someone here? I don't know if I can, you know, just be like that. Everyone in the world is trying for these things and I shouldn't try for them. I don't know if, you know, I've got that kind of strength. So, we are very cheap when it comes to Krishna. We guard our hearts very jealously from Krishna. Okay, Krishna, you know, I'll squeeze out a few drops for you, nothing more. But when it comes to our sense gratification, our own purposes, our own goals, oh, I'm ready to sacrifice. I'm ready to show determination. I'm ready to put so much energy into that. There'll be setbacks. I don't care. There'll be reverses. I don't care. I'm going forward to achieve my goals. Aren't those the kind of persons that are glorified in the material world? Can we make room, please? Again, sir. Now, in this chapter, Krishna has created the danger, the poison that's appearing in the ocean, and Krishna is solving the problem. Why is it that the Lord is turning along the demigods to Lord Shiva? Because Krishna wants to give his devotee Lord Shiva the credit. He is solving the problem, but he, just like in the battle of Kurukshetra, he had Arjuna get the credit. Similarly, in this dangerous situation with the hala poison, the Lord is giving the credit to Shiva. So the Lord and all the Vaishnavas approach Lord Shiva, and the demigods are praying to Lord Shiva, and it sounds like they're offering words of praise that are only meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you didn't know the context of this chapter, you could think that these prayers are meant for Vishnu. So how is it that they can pray to Lord Shiva like that? Because they recognize that the power of Lord Shiva is coming from Vishnu. They understand that within Lord Shiva is the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, with that attitude, they're offering prayers to Lord Shiva using terms that often describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is it that they want from Lord Shiva? They want him to do something to rectify the disturbing situation in the world. That's their deep-rooted desire. Prabhupada writes, when one worships demigods, this is certainly because of deep-rooted desires he wants fulfilled by the mercy of those demigods. People are generally attached to the worship of demigods for some motive. Think about it. Deep-rooted desires. What are your deep-rooted desires? Those are the things that you're going to try to sacrifice for. Those are the things that sooner or later are going to dominate your life. You can pretend, you can hide from it, but sooner or later those deep-rooted desires take over your life. And that's what you become determined to achieve. Best to put your deep-rooted desires out on the table, air them out, and take a look at them. What are they? But you cannot examine your deep-rooted desires clearly unless you're in a clear atmosphere. Therefore, the devotee community, the temple community, is a very nice situation in which you can look at yourself and actually see clearly what's going on. What is your real program? What are your real motivations? Sometimes it is inconvenient associating with devotees because you get to see in yourself some ugly things. And it would be easier to just, you know, be around materialistic friends who always compliment you. Remember what some of you, what materialistic friends are like? They always agree with you. That's why they're your friends. They support you. You support them. No one criticizes each other. They line up behind you when someone offends you. You line up behind them when someone offends them. Yeah, that's materialistic friendship. It's all about fulfilling each other's senses. But in devotee friendship, we see our faults more clearly, and that's great mercy. We should appreciate that opulence of the association of devotees. We shouldn't become depressed when we see our faults in contrast to others. Actually, Prabhupada says a very interesting thing in one purport. He says that it is a necessary factor for spiritual advancement that a devotee in the association of other devotees feels disturbed or sad that all the other devotees are better than me. They're doing so much service. I'm not doing anything. Prabhupada said that is a necessary emotion for spiritual advancement. Very interesting. It's a sign that you're making spiritual advancement. Just look, these devotees are all serving Krishna so nicely. What have I done? Prabhupada said that's actually a sign of spiritual advancement, and in fact, it is necessary. This is how mysterious bhakti is. Now, if after feeling like that, oh, everyone is better, I'm not doing any service for Krishna, and then you just sit down and do nothing. That is material lamentation. Oh me, oh my, oh, I'm so fallen, oh, I'm so useless, oh, I can't do anything right, I'm so full of anarthas, I'm so full of problems. Spend the whole day lamenting like that. What's the use of that? If it's actually spiritual emotion you're feeling, that sadness that, oh, just not serving Krishna nicely, so many others are serving more nicely, that spiritual emotion propels you into more service. That's the point. So Prabhupada is commenting that the spiritual emotion is necessary for Krishna conscious advancement. So don't automatically freak out if you feel this way. Oh, others are so much better, they have so much more abilities, Krishna's reciprocating with them more. Don't immediately think that, you know, this is bad. In fact, if this emotion leads to an increase in service, it's very good. And in fact, Prabhupada says it's necessary. Think about that. It's a necessary emotion for a Vaishnava to feel that others are better. They're doing so much more service. Prabhupada said he felt that about his disciples. Not that, okay, I'm the guru and they are all, you know. These are all little spiritual masters whom my Guru Maharaj has sent me to train up. In other words, with just a little bit of training and counseling, they'll be better than me. This is the attitude of a Vaishnava. That's why Prabhupada writes in the purports in the Dhruva Maharaj section of the fourth canto that just like Dhruva Maharaj's mother was able to go back to Godhead because of the devotional service of Dhruva Maharaj, her son, he said, similarly, I am hoping that one of my disciples will become Krishna conscious and take my crippled self back to Godhead. Now, this is the world of Vaishnava emotions. It's just very different from material life. And the only way we're going to pick up these kind of Vaishnava emotions and become established in them is by the association of devotees. Otherwise, it doesn't come. Reading about it is nice, but to actually quickly assimilate these emotions, you need the society of devotees for your emotional growth. Just think about that. You need the association of devotees for your emotional growth in Krishna consciousness. Alright, so worshipping other demigods is not always a bad thing. We'll conclude with this point. If you're worshipping the demigods as agents of Krishna, and especially if you're worshipping the demigods, asking them for attachment to Krishna, then it's all cool. It's all permissible. Who shows this? The residents of Vrindavan. Remember? In the period between the Rasa Leela and Diwali, the residents of Vrindavan, led by Nanda Maharaj and his brother Sunanda, they decided, maybe this year we should worship Lord Shiva at Shivaratri. Maybe we'll do it this year. The explanation being that Vaishnavas do not celebrate Shivaratri every year, but because Lord Shiva is the topmost Vaishnava, periodically they do it, occasionally. So Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd member think like that. Yeah, I guess this year, let's do it this year. So they all decided to journey to Ambikavan in what is now Gujarat. They loaded up their wagons and went there to celebrate Shivaratri, to worship Lord Shiva. When they got there, they first took a bath in the river Saraswati. Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book that Saraswati, where is it now? Because it's not visible. But then recently, as I explained in Searching for Vedic India, scientists have indeed uncovered the ancient dried up riverbed of the Saraswati in Gujarat. That information wasn't available at the time Prabhupada wrote the Krishna book, so he probably just pointed out, you know, it's true, you can't see the Saraswati there right now. But anyway, in other words, it's there, and Nanda Maharaj went there. So, after the Brijbasis bathed, that's what you're supposed to do when you go to a holy place, you take a bath first. So then they offered worship to Lord Shiva and Ambika, his wife, Durga. They're always together. Ambika, Durga, Parvati, Sati, different names of Shiva's consort. She's the chaste wife because she's always with her husband. And so they worship Shiva and his wife. And then they worship the brahmanas, offering the brahmanas gold and cows and grains cooked in honey and ghee and all these natural opulent things. And they pray, they said to the brahmanas, may Lord Shiva be pleased upon us. In other words, you brahmanas, please arrange that Shiva is merciful to us. Then they took rest on the bank of the river. And what happened during the night? As they were all sleeping on the bank of the river, a huge hungry snake came up and started devouring Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj is crying out immediately to Krishna, oh Krishna, Krishna, please, please, this snake is devouring me, do something. It's not that Nanda Maharaj thought Krishna is God. He just knew that Krishna solves everything. He's my wonderful son. So immediately he calls out for Krishna. Save me, save me. Just like maybe you're in some danger. And what's the first thing you say? Oh my God! Oh God, help me! Oh! Nanda Maharaj called out, Krishna, Krishna! But not that he was thinking Krishna is God. That's the wonder of Vrindavan. Krishna is their everything, but they don't think Krishna is God. So, the cowherd men woke up. And they saw what was happening in Nanda Maharaj. And what did they do? They took out burning logs from the fire, the campfire. And they started beating the snake with burning logs. But still, the snake would not give up Nanda Maharaj and kept devouring him. This is determination. Can you imagine someone beating you with burning logs and you still won't give up? That's the kind of determination we need in Krishna consciousness. So, Krishna appeared. And what did Krishna do? He simply walked up to the snake and touched the snake with his lotus foot. And immediately the snake transforms into a beautiful demigod, a Vijayadara named Sudarshan. Glowing, effulgent, wearing golden necklaces. He's now standing before Krishna, bowing his head. What does Lord Krishna say? Can you please tell us how it is that one moment you were a horrible snake, and then now you are brilliantly a beautiful, effulgent demigod. Can you kindly explain what happened? This is Krishna just enjoying the drama. The Lord is omniscient. He knows everything. But, you know, more than knowing everything, Krishna is the enjoyer. So he's enjoying the unfolding of this pastime. Can you please tell us? This looks very odd. One minute you were a huge, hideous snake, now you are a beautiful demigod? What happened? So, the Sudarshan, the Vijayadara, explained that I was very handsome, I was very qualified, I was flying everywhere in my airplane, like an opulent demigod enjoying. And while flying here and there in my airplane, according to my own sweet will, I looked down and I saw some very homely, well, weathered and ugly-looking sages, followers of Angira Rishi. And I laughed. How unattractive these guys are. How miserable they look in terms of physical attractiveness. Because I did that, these sages, they cursed me to be a snake because of my pride, because my enviousness in saying these things about saintly persons. I was puffed up with my own beauty and I misjudged saintly persons. I evaluated them simply in terms of their physical characteristics, not looking at their spiritual wealth, so they cursed me to be a snake. Now I can see that that was their mercy upon me. Because although they cursed me to be a snake, I got to receive the kick of your lotus foot, which took away all my material contamination. Those who chant your name become purified. What to speak of those who feel your lotus foot? All material contamination goes away. After offering prayers like that to the Supreme Lord, he asked Krishna's permission. Now, please permit that I return to the heavenly planets. Showing that even for boons in the heavenly planets, even for heavenly planet benedictions, still you need Krishna's permission. That's why the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita that what benedictions the demigods give actually come from him. Because he's the supreme source. He's the storehouse, not the devas. The devas are just agents on his behalf. So, Sudarshan said, please, shall you permit me to return to the heavenly planets? He was going back as a surrendered soul. He referred to the Lord as Mahayogi, greatest mystic, Mahapurusha, the greatest personality, Satpati, master of the devotees, Deva, O Supreme Lord. order me as you like. So then he went back to the heavenly planets. And Nandamaraj and the cowherd men, they're astonished. Just look at what our Krishna is doing. So they quickly finished worshipping Lord Shiva and then went back to Vrindavan, simply talking about Krishna's glories. In other words, they come to worship Lord Shiva, but as a result of this pastime, their attachment for Krishna increased. So that is the proper use of the demigods, how to increase attachment for Krishna.
Alright.
Any questions?
Yes. The star effects and devotional service and the very sincere dance and try and share the devotees very nicely, but then our material desires come up. And so sometimes, you know, although we turn into serve the devotees, sometimes these old bullies and artists come up. Sometimes I find I can try and start to serve those and you know, try and find determination to satisfy those nights and priests. So how can we figure out if we're determined to serve Krishna or satisfy our senses? Because sometimes it's just so subtle.
Just go on with a regulated full schedule of devotional life and you'll be purified. You don't have to get neurotic about it. Just look and see. Am I fully engaged in Lord Chaitanya's mission, serving and Srila Prabhupada's desires? Watch your regulation, watch the intensity of your engagement, watch your relations with other devotees, and then you'll see that advancement will come. You don't have to torture yourself about it, you know, every day. Sometimes I notice devotees can get into that. Ooh, my anarthas. You spend half the day torturing yourself about your anarthas, you don't do anything. We already know that we have an artist. Now what are you going to do about it? Therefore, absorb yourself in devotional service. Yes, be aware of your contaminations, but don't let that slow down your engagement in devotional service, which is the cleanser. And in fact, the more you engage in devotional service, the more things in you you'll see that need to be fixed. That's good. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Tesham evanukam partam aham jnanajam tamaha nashami atma bhavastro jnana deepena vaskrata. Krishna says, out of compassion for you, I from within your heart will turn on the lamp of knowledge and you can see. And what are you going to see? You're going to see the book. Now, when that happens, don't get angry at Krishna. Understand, that's his compassion. Seeing the enemy is half the way to victory. Before you couldn't see. Now you can see. That's Krishna's mercy on you. So, once you see the enemy, then go on with your efforts to purify yourself through devotional service. Don't mental out about it. Oh, I got this anartha, I got that anartha. What about yours? Can you tell me your anarthas? I mean, sometimes I know as devotees really get into this, you know. Let's talk about anarthas. What are yours? Well, here are mine. And, the time passes and we just go on and on like that. Okay, we have things wrong with us as we progress in Krishna consciousness that are going to be fixed by the grace of Krishna if we are humble about it. So let's focus on how we're going to make a contribution for fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's desires, Srila Prabhupada's desires. And while we're doing that, be mindful of these things we have that need to be fixed. Anything else? Yes?
You said the same importance of being fully engaged in devotional service. How can we, it seems it's always possible to do more, so how do we know if we're fully engaged?
Just, make a schedule and see what you're doing all the time. You have some doubt?
Well, you already said goodbye, but I feel it's safe where I have their mind. I should be going more. And I could do more. But I did experience a lot of important things like,
you know. And good sleep.
Well, that's why Krishna has given you the other chari. So I'm sure between the two of you, you know, you'll work something out. Any other questions? Yes. There are six loving exchanges, and two of them are revealing your mind and having someone else reveal the mind to you. That doesn't mean just talking about anything. It means revealing your mind about how to advance in Krishna's service, problems in Krishna's service, like that. So friends are to inspire one another to go on in Krishna's service. Friends aren't to drag you back from Krishna's service. Watch out. Don't let them put you on the roster. Friends are those who contribute to your deeper immersion in Krishna's service in an intelligent way. Why is it that we have to equate deep absorption in devotional service with fanaticism? It doesn't have to be that way. Things can be done intelligently and soberly. But sometimes devotees have this idea that as soon as you talk about immersion in devotional service, full engagement, oh, fanaticism. And it doesn't have to be that way. You have intelligence. Krishna consciousness is meant to be executed with intelligence. So make a sane plan how to increase your value for Krishna. I tell devotees, look around and see what skills are needed for this temple community to move forward. If you see that no one is doing that, maybe you have the time or the ability to develop those skills. Be proactive, be very savvy about devotional service. There's so much opportunity in the world of Krishna consciousness if we're looking for that. Learn things, new things for serving Krishna. Develop new skills. Have a good time. Not that all half the day, you know, you spend looking in the mirror, what about my anarchist? There's a time for that, but not half the day. What about my skills? Yeah. What can I learn to do better for Krishna's service? What needs to be done around here? They need a cook? Let me learn how to cook. They need this? Let me learn how to do that. They need mridanga players? Let me learn how to play the mridanga. That's how a devotee thinks. And friends inspire you to think like that. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.